Good morning and welcome to the September 27, 2022 Sussex County Council meeting. First thing is the approval of the agenda. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, members of council. I do see one recommended change today for introduction of proposed zoning ordinances. I do not believe we have any, so we can strike that from today's agenda.
Okay. Entertained a motion to approve the amended agenda.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Hussin.
Second.
Second, Mr. Riley. Any questions on the motion? Take a vote. Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. We have the minutes of September 20th. Any questions, corrections, additions? Hearing none, they will stand approved. Correspondence, Mr. Moore.
We have none, Mr. President.
Any correspondence from council? Correspondence from council. Now is the time for public comment. Anybody in the audience can address council for up to 3 minutes on some subject we have some control over, interest in. Anybody in the audience want to make public comment? Public comment. Okay. Aubrey, would you check online, please?
If anyone has joined via the conference line and would like to make public comment, dial 5 star. If anyone has joined via the conference line and would like to make public comment, dial 5 star.
We'll close public comments. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Next item on the agenda is a presentation and discussion by the Sussex Sports Center Foundation. I believe Mr. Joseph Schell is here today to lead that presentation. Mr. Schell, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Councilman. And Council Lady. We are going to go through a series of about 12 slides. This is pretty old territory for some of us who were here the last time I showed up here to talk about the fields. We will give you some information about the fields and how well they're doing, but we'll also talk about the project we have at hand, which is a field house. It's about 300 yards long, 300 yards, and it's about 60 yards wide. So it's a big building, 48 feet high. We've got over the bearings from Georgetown, so that was good. But what we're trying to do, I will explain to you in just a sec. I'd like to introduce some people in the audience that are part of our team. Eric Schweitzer, who's involved with the Antelope and Soccer Club. He'll have some comments after mine to talk about what the fields mean and what the field house will mean to his kids, of which there are 1,300 of them in Antelope and Soccer. Jordan Belknap is a surprise guest. He's over there. He'll speak if we have questions about the solar farm that we're putting in on this property, not on any of the fields, a little bit further south. And that will provide income for the foundation in order to pay the expenses of the foundation and make sure it's solvent. So we'll introduce him. He won't say anything other than I wanted him to be recognized.
Sure.
He's going to be here a lot over the next year or so as we get started on not only the field house but also on the solar farm. Gerson, I'm not going to even try the last name. Gerson, stand up. Gerson is the president of the Superliga Soccer Club of all the Latino community, and they are a heavy user, our heaviest user beyond Antelope and Soccer, of the fields. They work for 6 days a week, so they only have one day to play, so that's Sunday. So they're our Sunday crowd. If you drive by on a Sunday, You can't drive in because there's very few parking places left. And they have all the families. They have a very different attitude about it. So people like me will show up for one or two of my grandson's soccer games. Their whole family shows up all day Sunday They eat at least one meal there. They bring it. They have cooks that are cooking out there, and they just do a great job using the facility to its max, which I'm so proud of. You want to say something?
Yes, good morning, everyone. Yeah, like Mr. Joe just mentioned it, we play there every Sunday. This year, we're celebrating our 15th anniversary. It's been 15 years since we started. We started playing in Seaford, then we moved to Georgetown, Sussex Tech, and then we moved to St. Hills. Thank you, Mr. Joe, for that project. We're so pleased to be there. We started with adult league. Now it involves the whole family. We now the ages that we have our tournament every Sunday. It's from 15 through 40 years old. And we also included a couple years ago, we started to include the women's league. So now we got up to 14 teams. And this year that we celebrate our 15th anniversary, we had the championship of the ladies, and we had a big celebration. We had a festival that we had that was on the 11th, where we drew a couple thousand people from around Sussex County. And it's not just every Sunday. On Sundays, we play the league. But it's kind of like every day I go there. Like sometimes I stop on Mondays or Tuesdays, and in the afternoons, the whole families come and practice with single families, but we also have groups. Our teams go there and practice, and I see, you know, kids from different ages. I see ladies practicing there. I see the men's also practicing. So it's kind of like every single day. Sand Hill Field, it's been kind of like, you know, our regular place that where we all the Hispanics go and have some fun, and on Sundays is when we do our tournament. Unfortunately, this is only during the summertime. Once the weather, you know, breaks and we get the winter here, we'll have nowhere to go. So we pretty much stay home, or the ones that can travel, we go, you know, out of state to play into indoor facilities. So with this project that Mr. Joe is presenting, it means a lot to us, and it is very important. And I really, and you know, will be, our community will be really appreciated if you support this project, because we will have a place to go now during the winter. We still can, you know, get together our kids and our youths. They will be busy playing and practicing. And we will have the opportunity to keep promoting soccer in different divisions, kids, men's and women. So your support is very important to our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I also want to introduce and have him stand. Brad, if you'll stand up. Brad is the general manager of both facilities right now, of all the fields, but he will also be saying grace over the field house when it's finished. The nice thing about the field house, as we'll get into, is it's very low on operating costs. Once you build it, you don't have to cut the grass like we do on the fields. You don't have to fertilize. You don't have to irrigate. All you have to do is have somebody there when there's a lot of people there using it to make sure everything is done properly. Make sure the bathrooms are clean and that kind of stuff. But it's very low on personnel costs as well as on all the other things that I just mentioned. So that's one of the things that when I started thinking about this, I said, whoa, we're going to get a brand new facility, which is going to cost a lot of money, but it's not going to add so much to our operating cost, as you'll see as we go through the presentation. Also here is Lance Manlove from Shell Brothers. He's behind an awful lot of what we do from a construction point of view, making sure we're doing the right things. I don't think there's anybody here from Davis Bowman's Fridell, but there are our civil engineers, and they keep us straight with the town and with the county if we have any issues. We've been through a lot of the regulations that we need to go through for the field house, but we still have a few more to go. And so I expect by 2 or 3 months from now we will be through that process, ordering the steel and building next year, as you'll see. Okay, let me get to this. we're calling this phase two. The Santo Field House is phase two, 42,000 square feet, multiple, two courts. One is turf for the soccer players and the lacrosse players and field hockey players, and the other is a multi-sport surface, like a rubbery surface, and that'll be for also for the field hockey players and for the indoor pickleballers. Pickleball is, I just drove by, there's 25 cars out there with pickleballers all playing. They, when the traffic is going into Sussex County on the east side, that's in the morning, a lot of traffic, but the people coming back are the pickleballers, half of them. And they've really enjoyed the outdoor facility, but they're the most vocal people supporting us in the indoor facility, because there really isn't. We have two facilities in Sussex County. One is Sports at the Beach that has, I think, two courts, and the other is at the Plantations, and they have a couple courts, but they're subpar. They're not real good courts. So our plan here is to have courts that everybody wants to come to, even though they had to drive a little further to get to them. One of the big features here is this will be like Georgetown's and Sussex County's convention center. It's going to be big enough that you can hold all kinds of events in here, whether it's a commencement from a high school, whether it's a church service. Bill West has been using the parking lot for his church. I guess in the winter they'll probably want to move inside, and we'd be happy to have them. but it's the Georgetown Library has been using it for their fundraising events, so it's a good will use if they've used the outdoor, but they're going to be using the indoor as well. So it's not just a sports facility. It sounds like a sports facility, but it's more than that. Down in the lower right, we think the cost is going to be $7 million to build it, and we'd like to add, fund $500,000 contingency plan. There's a lot of things we can do to jazz up the field house. We're sort of bare bones right now, but as we go through this, we know there will be things that we just have to do, and we want to have the money to be able to do it. So we have a $500,000 contingency plan. Most of that money is coming from the private sector, $5.1 million, $300,000 we expect to raise from the business community, and the public sector is the state, the county, and the town, all in that number. The state has given us $500,000 as a grant, and town of Georgetown has given us $100,000 over 4 years. They pay $25,000 a year, and obviously the remainder of that is $1.5 million, which is a familiar number to all of you guys, because that's what you did the last time when we were in here begging for money. I'll let you just look at these words, but it says pretty much what I just went through, that it's not just a sports facility. That's its primary purpose. But I think it's going to be a big surface, indoors, heated in the wintertime. It will be cooled when it's rainy in the summertime. It'll be inside, and it's not just a winterized facility. It'll go both ways. This is what it looks like. This is the sport court on the foreground, the blue. That's a harder surface, faster surface for the field hockey players. That's where all of the, it goes across there. It's probably 6 to 8 pickleball courts will go in that blue area. And then the green is obviously the turf, and that's where we'll play soccer and lacrosse and sometimes field hockey. As you just talked, we just heard from Superliga, from Gerson, they have 800 members that use the field at one time or another, many times, most of them, every Sunday. So it's a repeat. And Lopin Soccer has 1,300 young kids in their programs. And we'll hear from the one of the members of their board at the end. Orange Field Hockey, 200 members. Coastal Lacrosse, 200 members. First State Pickleball, 550 members. That's the audience that we're focused on to use the indoor facility as well as the outdoor facilities. And as it says there, most of our people that populate the fields are from Sussex County. There's not a lot of, other than in tournaments. In the tournament, they'll come from Maryland, they'll come from Pennsylvania, New Jersey. But when it's just everyday play, we're reaching out to a lot of the people, a lot of the kids in this community. And as all of us know, we're getting a lot more kids. Why are we building so many more schools? The growth of the population is not just old geezers like me. It's people that serve the geezers. And I think that's, and they have kids, and they want to have all the facilities that they can have. And so this is one of the things that we provide. This structure will be a steel. There's other ways to go about it. There's a like a big bubble, but down here with a lot of wind. There's a lot of wind out on our fields because it's so wide open. With the wind and potential snow, hurricanes, it's just not a good idea to build something that's that fragile. So this will be a steel structure, which has added to the cost. But we think it'll add to the lifetime of the facility without too much maintenance required. Where is it on the fields? You see some of the fields there. This up in the vertical road is Sand Hill Road, if you can't see that. And the entrance to Sand Hill Fields is the gray road down at the bottom. We're going to put this right central to the whole thing. We were going to put it in a different place. There's some other land that we have a little further south, but we'd have to redo the parking lot. We'd have to do another parking lot. We'd have to do another road in, perhaps. So this makes so much more sense to, in the wintertime, not too many people are going to be in the parking lot, but I don't want to build another one just for a couple of people. So it was decided that we needed to squeeze it in there. It affects only the cross-country runners, and a lot of the schools are using the facility for the cross-country track that we have on the perimeter, and they will be affected only by not starting on field 8 but starting up on field 7. So it's not much of a problem. But anyway, that's the only thing we was wrong. I want to give you a little bit of the economics of this. Over the 2 years we've been operating and the part of this year, it shows what we think is the run rate of tournaments and the economic impact that the tournaments have on the local community. The hotels are filled up when we have a tournament. We have 30 or 40 players, or 30 or 40 teams. You multiply that by about 15, and that's how many people we have here, and then the parents of the kids. So our hotels out on 113 are filled up at times when they wouldn't normally be filled up in the early spring or late fall, and some during the summertime. But you can see that the economic impact to Sussex County in this year should be $750,000. I don't, we lost one of our tournament sponsors who brought tournaments in earlier this year. So we had a couple of big tournaments that were canceled because they went out of business. So this year is not going to be quite to the 750, but that's the potential of it's when we don't have that glitch that we had this year. one tournament that was held in March was the economic impact of $223,000. So this is hotels and everything that's indirect, which is food, gas, entertainment, so forth. Looking at our record so far as the foundation, we treat as income, because our accountant tells us to do that, donations. So you see that big number up there in 2021. That was a donation right at the end of that year by one person for $3 million. The rest is all the board members that have been solicited. We haven't really gone out into the community yet to solicit, other than friends of mine and friends of some of the other board members. The operating revenue is, as you see, if you look out to 2023 and 2024, we think the operating revenue will be probably around $100,000. Those are building up, and we don't have the field house in the 2023 numbers. So if you go all the way down under the 2023 number line, you see net income, which is unusual for a foundation, usually always begging for money every year to balance the budget. We may be, but we think that with the field house and the fields, we can, and the lack of additional operating expenses, which is I spoke to earlier, we can be a profitable organization, keep putting reserves away to do things that we think are necessary to maintain the fields, maintain whatever we need to do. So that's the economics of it. The solar field that we've talked about is the yellow there, come down from the field, all the fields. The neighbor to our right is Cheer, and as we all know, Cheer wants to develop that land into more help for their older people. So we're supportive of them, but we don't think we've shown this to them, and they're not at all concerned about what they're deciding to do and what we have decided to do. The best thing about this is, in its first year of operation, which we think will be 2024, we will receive $92,750 for leasing that land that the solar field is on. And that's into the foundation for the perpetuity of the foundation and these fields, depending on what you all decide with in 2030, I think, where you have the opportunity to buy out the foundation for a dollar. We give you that same great deal for the funds that you provide for the field house.
We're always after great deals.
So just to remind everybody, down below we need $7.5 million, $6 million for the general contractor, $1 million for other things that go that we'll have to buy, like netting and so forth, and then the contingency reserve of $500,000. The individuals and families, we've raised, I can't even read my own, $3.9 million so far, so we're most of the way to that goal, which will be 63% of the funds needed. Private foundations, we've met last week with Longwood Foundation down here. We have Arts Cannon Foundation coming on this coming Sunday. So those are our two main foundations that would be interested in something that's in their wheelhouse. The business community, much like we did with the fundraising for the fields themselves, we went out to the business community and said we would, if they would pledge $50,000, $25,000 at the date of pledging, and then $5,000 a year for 5 years, that made it a little more bite-sized than all 50 at once. And they loved it, so they were sponsor. If it was a car dealership, we only had one car dealership. So there's a exclusivity to it, which, and we'll do the same thing in the field house. We'll go back to those same people first and offer them the opportunity to hang banners in the field house. But we expect 300,000 there. And then public sources we talked about before, 1.5 million we were requesting from you all in the form of a loan to be repaid as the terms were for the other loan that you gave us. But overall, it's what we've always talked about, which is it needs to be a public-private partnership to be successful. We can't just be private and close our gates when we don't want people coming in. It needs to be a public facility. It's too much, spending too much money on a facility that's open to the public for anything they want to do, whether it's walking the trails or playing on one of the teams. So we think that the right thing to do is to continue on with the request for $1.5 million. The date set for the first request, which is, I think, sometime in 2030, you will have an option, you being the council, to buy the facility and operate it. But we won't turn it over to you unless we're making the money and putting reserves away. So that's our, we want to make it so enticing, you're going to say, yeah, we'll give you a dollar. But that's, the foundation's not in the business of running a facility long term. It's in the business of adding value to the county, to the community, for things that we don't think we have, and get out of the way if somebody else can come in and run it better. So that's our pitch, and we're sticking to it. Do I have any questions?
Any questions, Council?
I have one.
Mr. Riley.
Is the $306,000 in donations that you showed on the previous slide, is that part of the business plan long term? Is that going to be required to make the operation break even?
I don't think so, but I think we're going to always have fundraisers. It just stands to reason. A lot of people, as you've heard from some of our people who use it, and they're representing the parents of all the kids, they're perfectly willing to contribute the fees that they pay to handle open soccer, for instance, and to give us a big piece of that as a, not a big piece, they keep a big piece, we get some of it though, mm-hmm. in the form of rent, because we reserve the fields for them.
Right.
But I think that if we go out to their population and if I have access to them with a letter, it'll be easy. But I do think we're going to have to stay on the fundraising side of things until we get the numbers up above bigger. Without that, bigger than the ones down below.
Right. What about the length of the term for the lease on the solar farm? Is that a 20-year or?
It's 25.
25.
With, 3-5, I think this is right, Jordan, with 3 5-year renewals. Right. So it's a 40-year contract. They don't have to renew.
Does the doesn't require any maintenance over that period of time, or?
Yeah, but that's not our responsibility.
It's not your responsibility.
That's their responsibility.
Is there an escalator clause in there as far as how much income you'd receive from it, or is it fixed?
It's fixed in the first year of operation at $92,750, and then it escalates 2% a year for the next 25 years
or whatever.
Yeah, it gets. Gets to be a pretty big number, even though you only start with 2%.
It adds up. Yeah.
Yeah, so this, I think it was a fair contract based on our conversation with other promoters of the solar fields. Mm-hmm. We picked the one that we thought was the most honorable, and so far they've been great.
Right. And you don't think you're going to need additional parking for this?
Well, as you know, we have, not for the field house. But we have 350 parking spaces on the paved surface,
right
in front of the field house.
Right.
And then we have another 300 or 400 on the grass strips out along Sandfield fields. So we don't think we're going to need more, but the beauty of where we are is we have Sussex Academy. If the overflow will be weekends.
That's true.
So we have Sussex Academy, we can run bus, buses back and forth.
Right.
We have cheer.
True.
I don't know how much they have, but I know how much Sussex Academy has.
Right.
I just drove by, as you guys probably did.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. It looks like we need more parking over there. Too many of our kids have cars.
There you go.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
Anything else I can help?
Any more questions, council? Any more questions? I don't think so.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any others lost? Are we okay with that?
I think so. I have no more presenters, so I'll turn this off.
Okay, we're good. Okay. Move on down to the consent agenda. We have two items. Use of existing sewer infrastructure, IUA GP 170.03, Grotto Pizza Corporate Headquarters, West Redwood area. And use of existing sewer infrastructure, IUA 407-1, Plover Point, Oak Orchard area. Any questions on those two items? If not, entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Riley.
Second.
Second, Mr. Schaefer. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Mr. Lawson.
All right. Thank you, Mr. President. First item of business is recognition of retirees today. We have a unique opportunity to recognize three retirees, and by my math, we are recognizing over 100 years of combined service, so quite the feat. I'll tell you what, why don't we, for the sake of efficiency, I'm going to read the tributes and we'll go ahead and present all three at once. All right, ladies? Thank you. All right, so we'll start with Sherita Bell. I have a tribute here as well as a tribute from the County Council. I'll start with this. Sussex County Council tribute, be it hereby known to all that the Sussex County Council commends Sherita Ruth Bell, Purchasing Supervisor in Engineering, for devotion, loyalty, and excellence in serving Sussex County from September 1, 1992 to September 30, 2022, 30 years and 1 month. Sussex County Council extends its thanks and congratulations and directs this tribute to be presented to Sherita with wishes of happiness and good health. Signed, Michael H. Vincent. Congratulations, Sherita. Next we have Holly. Be it hereby known to all that the Sussex County Council commends Holly R. Brittingham, Facilities District Manager, Engineering, for devotion, loyalty, and excellence in serving Sussex County from September 14, 1992 to September 30, 2022, 30 years. The County Council extends its thanks and congratulations and directs this tribute to be presented to Holly Brittingham with wishes of happiness and good health. Signed, Michael H. Vincent. Congratulations, Holly. And Mary Catherine, be it hereby known to all that the Sussex County Council commends Mary Catherine Hopkins, Library Director for the Milton Library, for devotion, loyalty, and excellence in serving Sussex County from October 1, 1981 to October 14, 2022, 41 years. The County Council extends its thanks and congratulations and directs this tribute to be presented to Mary Catherine with wishes of happiness and good health. Signed, Michael H. Vincent. Congratulations. If you all would like to come forward. There we go. Yes. Okay, Holly. Sir.
Thank you. Congratulations to you. There you go.
Thank you.
Congratulations. And there you go. Congratulations. Congratulations. Lives in Bethel. She said her husband married you, Judge Hopkins.
That's their husband. She traveled together.
Do you really?
We have.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's a lifetime.
Still up.
Okay. County Administrator's Report for September 27th, 2022. Item 1, a final reminder for property owners in Sussex County that September 30th is the deadline to pay annual county property tax bills. Payments can be made in person, online, by phone, or by mail. Any payments mailed must be postmarked no later than September 30th. Payments made October 1 or later will be subject to penalty. This year's tax bills once again feature an easy-to-read format to help taxpayers better understand their bills and payment options. A number of payment options are available for the public's convenience. A tutorial explaining how to view information and to make payments is available on the county's website. Sussex County accepts tax payments by cash, check, money order, and debit or credit cards. Item number 2, a reminder. Council will not meet on Tuesday, October 4th. The next regularly scheduled meeting will be held Tuesday, October 11th. It says at 10 a.m., but I believe we're going to meet early that day because we will have the Coral Lakes appeal. But we are meeting Tuesday, October 11th for sure. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Karen Brewington, third quarter employee recognition awards. Come right on down, young lady.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of council.
Good morning. Good morning.
It's my pleasure this morning to announce and congratulate our third quarter Shining Star winners. We received 34 submissions for the third quarter, which was a little bit down, summer months, but I'm happy to announce the Shining Star Committee selected Ann Lepore of the Planning and Zoning Department and Lindsay Stubbs in the Geographic Information Department. So I'd like to read their submissions. On June 9th, 2022, due to the absence of one of her colleagues, Anne stayed late after the Planning and Zoning Commission and also came in early on June 10th to ensure that time-sensitive minutes were typed up ahead of the County Council meeting packet preparation deadline later that day. The work was completed in an excellent manner and in time for the packets to be sent out to council members. This is truly an example of going above and beyond to ensure that work is completed on time, and this is greatly appreciated by the Planning and Zoning Director. Well done, Anne. And that was submitted by Jamie Whitehouse. And I also want to say she is no stranger to the Shining Star. She has received other submissions throughout the year, so wanted to recognize that. Lindsay Stubbs, she received a submission by Lauren DeVore of the Planning and Zoning Department. Lauren wrote a letter to Lindsay's supervisor, manager. Good morning, Megan. I am writing to express my sincere appreciation for you and to make you aware of Lindsay's hard work on Friday. I have been researching specific parcels in relation to an appeals case we have coming up in early September and reached out to Lindsay for some assistance in obtaining the background history regarding these parcels. Though this type of request is not specific to her daily job duties, Lindsay was extremely helpful and patient with me, went above and beyond and took time out of her busy schedule to assist me with this request. She even called and explained the history of these parcels to me. Though I did have some of the information, there were some pertinent information I was still missing. Lindsay, thank you for all of your help on Friday. You and your efforts are always appreciated. Best regards, Lauren DeVore. So at this time, I would like to ask both Anne and Lindsay to come up and receive their certificate. Each will receive a certificate Shining Star pin and will be eligible for the Employee of the Year. And President Vincent, would you please come down to get your picture taken?
Thank you.
Mr. Schoonover's next, is he? There he is. Good morning.
Good morning. Morning, Mr. President, members of council.
Morning.
I'm here today to request a renewal lease for the Milton Medic 111 station. This unit operates 365 days a year, 12 hours a day. We've been there 3 years, and we want to extend our lease until we can build a station in that area. It's been a great relationship with CHEER. Thanks, Todd, for leading us that way. The lease renewal has been approved by the county attorney, the county insurance carrier, and it does reflect an increase in rent from $100 a month to $200 a month. But I can tell you, we keep two trucks there, and the HVAC units on there consume more than $200 a month in rent.
Sure.
So it's pretty much free rent there. And they roll the red carpet out for the medics there, feed them, and take good care of them. And it's been a great relationship there. We want to continue.
Great.
So I have a motion.
Please read your motion.
Be it moved, the Sussex County Council approves the lease agreement between CHEER, Inc. and Sussex County Council as per the terms and conditions of the written lease agreement.
Pleasure, Council.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Schaefer.
Second.
Second, Mr. Hudson. Questions on the motion? We'll take a vote. Mr. Schaefer?
Yes.
Mrs. Green?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Mr. Whitehouse, old business.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of council. We have two items of old business on this morning's agenda. The first is conditional use number 2300 filed on behalf of MRBP LLC. This is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 residential district for a borrow pit for a parcel of land located on the southwest side of Macquarie Road, approximately 857 feet south of Frankfurt School Road. County Council may remember this from the last council meeting on September 20th, where the record was reclosed and we announced receipt of those additional comments and Council deferred action for further consideration.
Pleasure, Council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Hudson.
This is for the conditional use. Typically, we'd read the short title with the conditions,
okay,
etc.
Okay.
Yes, an ordinance grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for a borrow pit to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 56.93 acres, more or less, for reasons given by planning zoning numbered 1 through 8 with conditions 9A through D.
Pleasure, Council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Hudson.
Second.
Second, Mr. Riley. Questions on the motion? We're going to take the vote. Mr. Hudson.
Mr. President, I've given this application a lot of thought. There's been a lot of information provided, and I know the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval of it with conditions. After considering all the information in the record, I cannot support a borrowed pit in this location. Under our zoning code, one of the things we need to consider any conditional use is the possible impact on neighboring properties from a proposed use. Here, I believe that this would have an adverse impact on the nearby properties. While there's a need for dirt, sand, and gravel, there are better locations for borrow pits in more rural areas of the county that will not have an impact on homes or community uses properties like the adjacent recreational fields that are next door to the property. I am concerned that this borrow pit is essentially shoehorned in among a community recreational facility on an irregular shaped piece of property. This proposed borrow pit is also on a small road, and there was testimony in the record that Macquarie Road would not be able to handle the volume of large truck traffic that would come from the use of this property as a borrow pit over many years. Same is true of Roxana Road, Frankfurt School Road, which all connect to McCary Road. Although the Dell Don information in the record stated that the use would likely only generate fewer than 50 vehicle trips per day, that does not take into account the fact that these would be large, heavy trucks and not ordinary vehicles. I'm not satisfied that McCary Road or other nearby roads can handle what is essentially industrial truck traffic. The neighborhood should not be burdened by this truck traffic and the noise generated by it either. Our comprehensive plan states that, quote, it is important that commercial and industrial development occurs in a scale, intensity, and distance appropriate to residential neighborhoods, unquote. I don't believe that the proposed borrow pit is in compliance with this standard. It's essential an industrial, it's essentially a industrial mining operation with dredges, heavy equipment, and heavy truck traffic on the site and in the air, on the area roads. And this is not compatible with the scale and intensity of this neighborhood. I also considered the extensive opposition to this application, including a petition with 17 signatures from the community. This opposition came from neighbors or residents who regularly use the roadways and would directly be impacted by this application. Their reasons for opposing this application included concerns about traffic and the volume of truck traffic that would be generated by this use. They also stated concerns about the noise coming from all the equipment that would be used as part of the borrow pit operations. As a result of all this, they also stated reasonable concerns about the impact of having a borrow pit nearby to their property on the property values. There was also testimony from nearby farmers who expressed concern about the impact of the borrow pit on chicken farming operations and water quality. I find all these concerns to be compelling. On the other hand, no parties other than the applicant and its representatives appear at the public hearing in favor of this application. I understand that the application, that the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval of this application. However, based upon the record that we heard at our public hearing and the reasons I've explained here, I can't follow the Commission's recommendations at this time. I also don't feel that the recommended conditions can adequately address the potential adverse impacts of this borrow pit at this location. The application, if approved, would be detrimental to the health, safety, and general welfare of the neighboring property owners and pedestrians and motorists in the area. And for all of these reasons I've mentioned, based on all these reasons, I am voting not in favor of the conditional use 2300 for the borrow pit.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Schaefer.
I agree completely with Mr. Hudson's recommendations, in particular the condition of the road. I think that we need to pay attention to that, not only in this application, but in future applications, and I also vote no.
Mrs. Green.
I agree with Councilman Doug Hudson's testimony here today, and I will vote no.
Riley.
I also vote no based on the reasons and rationale offered by Councilman Hudson.
I also certainly find compelling Mr. Hudson's comments, and I will say I've been by that twice in the last couple of weeks, and I was by there yesterday afternoon, and I had to pull off the road for a school bus to pass me. So it's a kind of a narrow road when you meet two people. You know, I don't think it's a good place for a lot of dump trucks and cars and that kind of stuff. So I'm going to vote no. Also, motion denied. Next, sir.
Thank you. Our next item of our business is an ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County, Chapter 72 and Chapter 115, regarding the affordably priced rental units and the Sussex County Rental Unit Program. County Council may remember this from the update that was provided by staff at the meeting of August 9th of this year, at which Council then discussed it. I'm going to yield to Mr. Robertson to provide an update on this, but I am available to join the IT.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President, members of Council. This is sort of a final update before the vote. As you recall, we were in front of you all a couple weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago, sort of talking about the information we got from Planning and Zoning and going through some issues to address perhaps when the motion or when the ordinance is acted upon. Based on the input we got from you all, we sort of distilled that down into a fairly short list, and I just want to go through that with you today so that we're fairly clear on what we need to do the next time we come around, which would be in a couple weeks, I guess. Mr. Whitehouse, there is just the list, and I think you all have copies of this. Going through the first one, we took a look at the eligibility for tenants. This is currently in our code, section 72-20, and there was a concern, a fair housing concern expressed to us if we limited it to Sussex County residents or folks that work in Sussex County. That could be a claim that we weren't adhering to fair housing policy. So the proposal is to delete that requirement, but introduce new language that says there shall be a preference given to tenants who have worked or resided in Sussex County for at least 1 year preceding the application to the SCRP. So if you have two tenants, all things being equal, the preference would be given to the person who's worked or lived in Sussex County. The other thing that we heard going through this process was to eliminate the requirement to the county that proof be given that adult tenants have not been convicted of a felony or have a satisfactory credit in criminal history. That set a double set of standards, because there would be then a set of standards to the county and then also to the landlord or the property management agency. We've changed that so that it states that prospective tenants must comply with the criminal and credit history requirements for tenants of all leases within the development. Again, so everybody's treated the same. The next one, we heard from you all in particular about, and this is section 72-27, and then in the zoning code, that we ought to build into this sort of a look back or a time to kind of do a comprehensive review of whether it's worked, what we need to maybe tweak or fix, because either it goes too far, doesn't go far enough, whatever. I think the thought being that if we build in a specific date, then we'd adhere to it, versus just saying, well, we should do this, and we wouldn't have then a deadline to do it. And there was actually a notation in the current code in 72-27 that talked about this being sort of a living document that would be subject to amendments and evolution as we went through and saw these projects. So we just added a line in there in furtherance of that that says that Sussex County shall commence a comprehensive review of this SCRP program on or before January 1 of 2020. It basically puts it 5 years out, thinking that would be enough time to see some applications, because remember, they don't have public hearings, get them through site plan and get things underway. So we would at least have a definite time in there to do that. We didn't want to put it too soon, because we would, just going through all the agency approvals, we wouldn't necessarily see something under construction. We didn't want to put too far and then find ourselves with that.
I mean, 5 years seems like a long time to me. I mean, if you should have a sense of whether you're getting interest and applications coming in sooner than that.
Well, yeah, that's true. I think, but there's sort of two key measurables, that's a word in this. One is, are we going to get applications to build these projects? I think that will come in much sooner than 5 years. On the other side, though, we wanted to see these projects being built to know whether, the percentages of SCRP units was workable, whether people knew that the open space is workable, the design requirements. We could certainly move that up, to address that first sort of threshold issue, when we start seeing applications. There's nothing to prohibit us if we get a groundswell of applications, to revisit it before then. But we wanted to put an outside date of the 20th.
Yeah, that's true. Or if we go 2 years and have nothing. That's probably
right.
More problematic. That's what I'm concerned about.
Mm-hmm. Well, but under this, if it's crickets for 2 years, we can come back and revisit it.
Right. I mean, should absolutely. We request maybe just a report, a review, or update?
We can, and again, we're not voting on this today, so we could add in there just like annual reports in terms of the
How's it going?
Okay.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good suggestion. This next one we heard at Planning and Zoning, and then we heard at County Council, and we got written comments on this as well, that the 30% requirement that of all the dwelling units, and this is on page 4, that 30% of all the dwelling units in a development be SCRP units. We got some compelling information on that, that the economics make that tight to work, because remember, we'd rather have more of these projects with a little bit less percentage than nobody doing it because it doesn't work economically. So the recommendation on that is that we change it from 30% to 25% of all dwelling units in a project must be SCRP units. It drops it down a little bit. It's still within the LSA report that we commissioned, those percentages are. So that's still within that sort of those guardrails. This is one we heard, the next one on page 5. It's actually item number 4. Add the under the future land use map, we had town center developing area and coastal area. There was a desire to add the commercial area as one of the eligible locations for these SCRP projects. It just sort of expands the locations where these can go. Now, keep in mind, that's not commercial zoning. That's the commercial sort of colored area on the future land use map. And there wasn't any concerns with that. The next one was one that we did hear a lot of comments on, and there was, I think, some legitimate concern about this. This is the one that says where these projects have to be located with regard to, originally it said existing DART lines. And we had those maps, we showed them to you, we showed them to Planning and Zoning. Right now, Sussex County's not served all that much by DART. I mean, it's on the major roadways, like I know Mr. Whitehouse has the maps. And you can see, really, it's just the Route 1 corridor, Route 24, and not a whole lot else. It was, and some of Route 9. It was, I think, well-intentioned, but too limiting in location. And what came out of Planning and Zoning was a recommendation that it's either on an existing DART line or there's written confirmation from DART that they would put it in within a certain time period of the final site plan approval. When we talked about that some more, and I think we got feedback from the state as well, the issue with that is whether they would even issue such a letter or that it would be so contingent on so many factors that, you know, you don't know whether they would ever actually put the DART route in. Or, frankly, they just withdraw it at some point, you know, and then we're sort of stuck. So we kind of realized that that wasn't the best way to go. So what the suggestion is to tie it into the types of roadways, thinking that if you build it, DART will come eventually. But if we're on the types of roadways where DART would put a line, then we're better served, and these projects are better served, and the residents are better served. So we change it so it's within 2,640 feet of a principal arterial road, a minor arterial road, or a major collector road as classified by the Delaware Department of Transportation. And you can kind of see those are the bright red ones, sort of, I'm looking at this, I guess that's maroon, I don't know, and the orange ones. So it really picks up a lot more roadways within Sussex County, but also keeps them off the more rural roadways that, you know, as we just heard in that last application, maybe couldn't handle the traffic and wouldn't likely see a DART route also. So it really expands that and takes out that whole uncertainty about what DART may or may not do with regard to a future route.
So it's not contingent on DART?
Not at all. We've taken DART out completely and just done it by roadway classification.
Personally, I think that makes sense because when we're talking about workforce housing and in that income range, the likelihood of someone not having an automobile is pretty slim.
Right.
I mean,
right.
This is not low-income housing.
Right. No, that's
housing.
True.
So they're overwhelmingly going to have their own vehicle. And so to make the project contingent on catering to the needs of just a very small minority,
right,
could be problematic. So,
no, and I think it, as I said, it makes sense to put it on those types of roads that are already classified as being able to handle traffic. So that means not only the traffic that might be generated from these types of developments, but also, as I said, it may prompt us to get more public transportation down here if the developments occur, and then the roadways will be able to handle
right.
it.
So, they're both good points. Plus, it keeps this type of development from being on some back road in a cornfield somewhere.
Right, right, that's not compatible with the roads.
Right.
This next one, item number six, was a planning and zoning recommendation, and it was, this I think was Scribner's error on the Scribner. it said that, it's talked about the setback, the 100-foot wide setback. It said, this setback shall include walking and biking trails. You know, certainly we would like to have those, but there's no reason for that to be a requirement, so it just says may. It's a fairly minor one, but one we wanted to point out, because it actually did get some attention. This next one came from planning and zoning, and it has to do with the setbacks, really with the height requirements, as it contends with that setback, that 100-foot setback. Keep in mind that currently the height is 42 feet for a building at AR1, so you can go to 42 feet today if you wanted to for your house or, you know, whatever you're going to build. We did increase this for these multifamily complexes to 52 feet, but planning and zoning actually sort of recognized that if you're going to stay at the permitted height of 42 feet, you shouldn't then sort of be penalized with the 100-foot separation. If you do stick at the 42 feet, it basically reduces that 100 feet down to 50 feet. Because keep in mind that 100 feet, we designed it and we checked to make sure it would work, but that was designed so that the height area in bulk of what we're permitting for these projects would have some separation from the low density AR1 that would be around it. And so if you're keeping particularly the height of the height area in bulk requirements to what's permitted in AR1, it's maybe not as necessary to have 100 feet, and 50 feet makes more sense. So, and then the next one, item eight, this one just changed it to state that there must be sidewalks on at least one side of all streets and interconnectivity with adjacent walkway systems whenever possible. That was just a point that we got from the public through this. And then the last one was, we heard from several developers and designers about this with regard to the open space and specifically the primary view from each dwelling. We had a requirement that the primary view shall be directed to open space and recreational amenities, just to sort of keep the design of these projects so that they're well thought out and nobody was looking at the wall of another building, for example. And what we kind of realized after hearing from the designers is, because these SCRP units are to be integrated into all of the buildings, it's not that there's going to be one building that has them all in it, this is too limiting in design. You know, if somebody's going to make a marketable project, they're going to want to have the views be appropriate for those units, so why do we need to get into the business of designing them? So we just took that out. And essentially, that's it, I think, based on the information that you all had suggested, and if everybody's good with that, what we'll do is come back with those in the form of motions to consider when adopting the ordinance here in the next, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks.
Looks like October 18th, we try to bring this back for a final vote with these amendments.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions of council for Vince? Okay, thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Good work. Very good, thank you.
Grant request, Mrs. Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. There's one grant request. It's Autism Delaware's requesting $2,000 for their Walk for Autism. If you recall, last month, Council approved a grant to them in the amount of $2,000, which was $400 each from each council member's account for the Blue Jean Ball. However, that event has been canceled and the check has been voided. So they're asking, they're coming back and asking for that $2,000 again, but this time for their Walk for Autism. And Mr. Schaefer placed on the agenda.
Schaefer.
Is that acceptable?
Sure. It is, as long as you vote for it, yep.
Yeah. Yep. You want to do the same thing all over again? Everybody donates $500.
$400 each,
yes. Motion, Mr. Schaefer.
Second.
Second, Mr. Hudson, to grant $2,000 to Autism Delaware for their Walk for Autism, being $400 from each councilmatic account. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Council member comments. Any council member comments? Council member comments. Okay, moving along, we will entertain a motion with executive session for land acquisition and pending potential litigation.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Hudson?
Second.
Second, Mr. Riley. Any questions on the motion? Yes. We'll take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
I would get an executive session for land acquisition and pending potential litigation.